When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here's the answer to the title. The 10 stories are A Whydunit, A Rite of Passage, Institutionalized Superheroes.
Are all stories just one thing? If you watch 10 To the Ramble episodes, what else is there to learn?
Welcome everyone to the To the Ramble podcast episode. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today, we're going to be talking about the 10 stories that have ever been written. There's only been 10. There will only always be 10. And everything else is just a retelling.
It seems to be the case. You know, we read the same types of messages repackaged in different ways throughout the generations.
I've read one of every type. So I think I'm ready to call it quits on reading.
We're done?
I think we're done.
It's something to be said that when we're reading stories, for whether it's for art, entertainment, whatever your purpose is, it is notable that throughout history, throughout the generations, you cannot possibly consume everything. You can only consume so much, and especially you can't consume everything in a historical context, because we can really only understand and grasp language of today. We can't speak other languages, even if it is translated. Some things get lost in translation. And not just that, when you look back in all of time, Shakespeare, even before Shakespeare, still close enough to English, even pre-English language. And you see these stories that started as mythos and then turned into fairy tales, and those fairy tales turned into ACOTAR. You just see the line of how even the things we read today that we think are so fresh and new, I mean, did they just say it back in ancient Greece, ancient Egypt? Is it all the same, Rich?
We're all the same. There is nothing original. There's just variations in the code.
And we're going to give them all. We're going to give you the 10 different stories.
To give you the answer right out of the gate.
Rapid fire it?
Here's the answer to the title. The 10 stories are A Whydunit, A Rite of Passage, Institutionalized Superheroes, Dude with a Problem, The Fool Triumphant, Buddy Love, Out of the Bottle, A Golden Fleece, and Monsters in the House. Now, what did those words mean? What type of stories are those actually? You'll actually have to listen and watch the rest of the video to find out. But we gave you the answer. Those are the 10.
And that's not coming from us. So
we didn't come up with those.
This is all from the book Save the Cat and How to Write a Novel. It's a great way to construct the novel if you're out there and you're a writer and want to look, hey, three act structure, what a character's made of, and then also going over genre like this and the different types of stories that are told. And you can even dumb it down one more and say there's only one type of story, and that's plot does thing. Characters exist. I mean, if we want to get super reductionist, be like,
sure,
all stories are the same because they all have characters. Like, how granular can we get, or how macro can we get to go, they're all the same?
Sure. This is a healthy middle ground.
Yeah.
Still have something to say without being too macro about it.
Yeah, because you could, sure, when we're saying all stories are the same, the only 10 stories exist. In a way, the reason we enjoy stories and read so many with the same messages, same themes, is because what you can do in stories is look at something from a new perspective.
I mean, yeah, it could be the same story, but a good example is Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow. Ender's Shadow is the same story from a different perspective with its own new messages and all that. But I digress. Mm-hmm. But no, we have this. There's also a reader aspect to it, that sometimes when we read a book with a certain type of story, maybe we don't get everything from it. Maybe we only comprehended some small fraction. we read another, a completely different story that basically has the same message, the same themes, we'll understand it a bit more. So if you read one whodunit, maybe you don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. You read 100 whodunits, maybe you do. And it's not, sorry, Save the Cat doesn't say whodunit, it's a whydunit. I understand your distinction, but do you want to get into that one? Start off the gate, what it actually means?
We definitely can. We can jump back and forth between a couple things here. So starting with, this is one of the stories, whydunit. What is a whydunit and why people see this type of story archetype everywhere?
Yeah, so basically a whydunit, or the more known colloquial answer of a whodunit, is mystery, which has the detective, a secret, and a dark twist. That makes it. The reason why the author of this book called it a why done it instead of a who done it is because who is just kind of a simple, like, oh, people aren't looking for, oh, who the murderer is. Normally it's why. That's what makes it a story, is why did the murderer do what they did? And the how function that goes into it. It doesn't really matter that the butler did it. It matters why the butler did it. That's what's thrilling. Basically, I mean, one of some good examples that we've actually covered on this channel is Annihilation, All Systems Red, and then basically every Agatha Christie book. Yep. For me, Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie is a wonderful why done it. Mm-hmm. I really love that book and that series. So, yeah.
Very well said. Yes, the why done it. People, your favorite murder mystery shows and films. It's one of those plot archetypes, the genres that you immediately know. It's your Sherlock type. It's your fill in your detective character. This kind of story. And the reason that maybe has such a compelling retelling value with the why is you can put something like Knives Out, a movie that I really love and won't spoil for people, but the cool twists you can do, and when the author outsmarts you when you're reading it and where you're watching it, that's when they do it the best. That's when those stories just hit you because you're trying to put the pieces together. It was all in front of you. You could have solved it, but they put just enough of red herrings or off track to make you think it was going one way, then really surprise you with something deeper, something unexpected. When I feel dumb in a murder mystery, job accomplished.
a great example that I'm trying to think of, so Murder on the Orient Express, which I think is old enough that I feel like I can give spoilers on that one.
I think you're good for that.
Am I good to, warning here now that I'm spoiling the ending of, you know, Murder on the Orient Express. But the great thing about it is the secret and the dark twist, like the twist, the whole thing of why did the murder happen? So the mystery, the secret of what happened was all of the suspects killed the victim. It was all of them at once. So they were all in on it. And then the why is how interesting, of every one of them had a motive and they all came together to commit this murder. And so you have the mystery, the dark twist, and the why kind of all combined together. It also makes you feel silly because you're following all these clues of like, oh, but this person had motive and this person had opportunity. And you combine all this, like, yes, the answer is yes, all of them did it.
I feel like that book was written about you. It's like, you know how many people want you dead, Rich? Just think about it. Imagine so many people in your life have a reason to kill you.
They all got on the same train as me.
Just, what do you have to do as a person?
How sad to get to that would that level? Be? If, like, I'm taking an Amtrak. I can't even afford the plane. I get killed on the Amtrak.
Oh.
Ugh.
Oh,
that's a bad way to go.
At least
the Orient Express is a nice, elegant train. At least you can go out with some style.
Class.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to class with murder?
Getting killed on like the Amtrak is one step above, but not very far. Like murder on the Greyhound. Honestly, I kind of want that mystery.
Yeah.
That'd actually be kind of funny.
That would be just a complete twist on the high ritzy class. Like, nah, just get it down and dirty.
It was also just how funny the, one of the setting aspects of the Orient Express is they're stuck. They're on this fast moving train. No one can leave. No. So you're all stuck together in your confined space and the murderer's among you. And you're on the Greyhound. So in. It's like, there are no walls. We know. Like, how did this happen? Bus driver, please stop. No. We're not stopping till we get to Tulsa.
What's that? That one Keanu Reeves movie, forgetting the name of it, but where
you have to keep the
foot on the pedal because there's a bomb attached to it or something. So it has to keep going down the highway. That, but with a murder mystery.
But even better is the bus driver just doesn't determined. It's like, I don't care if someone got murdered behind me. We're going.
I have Pilates at 7. Like, just so focused. So that's the why done it aspect. And kind of in between these, I want to add some little facets to this conversation, okay? One of the things that kind of referred to earlier, and just why we're having this conversation, is about how these stories have so many similar archetypes, and you can read them in different ways and enjoy them, rightfully so. One of the things I was referring to earlier is Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. And that's not a why done it.
No.
But I'm just putting a little factoids
in
here.
That would be a buddy love, which we'll get to later.
Should we save it for buddy love then?
Let's
save it for a later point when it becomes more relevant. But we will talk then about the second one. Do you want me to go on to the second one here?
Go ahead.
The second one is rites of passage. Now, rites of passage.
Very common in the fantasy genre.
Some of my favorites. Stories ever are rites of passage. One of my favorite books that does it, Sword of Kaigan. There's a lot more movies that we could refer to that do rites of passage, but what rites of passage is essentially a coming of age. A coming of age, you're dealing with life's problems, and you see this a lot with YA, not just YA, but something geared more for children becoming adults. Or that Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where your daily problems happen, whether you're dealing with parents, you're dealing with school, you could be older, dealing with divorce, some sort of life problem that hits you, and you have to make a passage of sorts and deal with this and confront it in some way. Fair enough?
Basically. And it has the basic three ingredients of this is you have to have a life problem, you have to have a wrong way about combating this problem, and then you have to have a hard truth, a hard kind of a difficult truth. An acceptance of a difficult truth. There we go.
Which comes in handy when that character needs to learn something. So they have some flaw where maybe they see life as, they don't take life too seriously, but they need to learn over time that you have to go through hardships, or something that we love, like with Sing Street.
Yep.
A great film that has the rites of passages coming of age story. A lot of also, what would you say, book coming of age story example that we've both read, or maybe that just you've read?
Neuromancer.
Huh. Wouldn't think of it that way, but I guess it has an aspect.
Well, no, it has exactly of a life problem of the main character being incredibly detached from reality and depressed and wants to kill himself. And then, how does he deal with it? He deals with it through substance, through vice, through basically trying to detach himself from his body and the world and other people. And then ultimately, the bitter truth, the acceptance of that his body and his life and connections with others are important to what makes life worth living. It isn't just these external gratifications.
Fair enough. I mean, that's the thing we're not discussing too, is the 10 stories here. I think, especially books, because there's a lot to them, but can happen in any types of stories, you can overlap in some. I think you can use several archetypes. You can have a why done it that is also a coming of age. That would be like when you mix those, ooh, that could be new and fresh. And when I say the words new and fresh as well, we're saying only 10 stories exist, and going through these 10 different lists. Do you think that there is something to that point where we're saying, is novelty important? Do you have to break the wheel of, can I find something that goes outside the bounds of these 10 stories? How important is it? Is it possible?
Novelty is important to everyone, but not everyone. Something new is not always new for every single person. So someone who's read a ton of whydunits will not be impressed by a story that is doing it in the same way versus someone who's never read a why done it and then goes, oh my God, this was so great and new to me. So it's not novelty on the global aspect or the medium. It's not, this was new for the genre. No, it's, hey, that was new to you. And that's valid. And that's why it hit so well. There's plenty of those type of stories. That's why Wheel of Time hit so much for me. It was new to me at the time I read it. When reading, Pendragon when I was a littler.
I love Pendragon.
It was new.
That was great. Yeah.
Now, not so new and fresh. Not so novel. It's why there's a couple elements of Red Rising that a function of it was not new to me. And so it wasn't novel. And so, wasn't as that element of the book.
It wasn't the novel, wasn't novel.
Exactly.
Interesting.
But for you, when you read it, some of the stuff that I brought up, like, you're like, new to me. I still enjoyed it. It was so. Depending on your reading journey.
You also set my expectations up really well. You're like, hey, Hunger Games in space. Cool. I'm on board.
Anything better than that is going to be awesome.
Yeah. So that whole point there of novel to you, is it something fresh that you're reading? You can think differently of stories when you're a kid versus adult. Things will hit you differently. Things are written differently. So that's definitely true. Also the fact that stories can be repackaged in ways for you specifically to where maybe that story about love, maybe the story about war doesn't hit you as much because you don't relate to the character. Plot does something off for you. Just a life experience, something blocks you from emotionally connecting with it. Where since stories can be repackaged in a way, which, hey, I'll give you all the benefit of the doubt with Red Rising, repackaging a Hunger Games-esque story into Red Rising. I've read both Hunger Games and I've read Red Rising.
Repackaged better. Yeah.
Yeah. Is one for me the fact, hey, maybe just the fact it's a male character versus a female character. Maybe that because I'm a guy, maybe I like Red Rising more that way. Although Hunger Games is kick ass.
There's also the factor of maybe Hunger Games was the right packaging for you at a certain time in your life.
Yeah.
And another time in your life, Red Rising is better packaged.
Right. I was like, I was just feeling very vengeful. Yeah. I just wanted to come on. Rise.
I need that male rage.
Just give me testosterone. I'm doing better now, I promise.
Yes. He's off the sauce.
I'm when Red God comes out, I'm going to get my testosterone back. I'm like, oh, come on. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. So that how stories can repackage similar concept for you in a different way, you can just latch on to it more. So that's what we're going to see a lot when people say, oh, this is my favorite thing. This is what I love. A lot of it is that. But do you want to go into the third?
Yeah.
The third story that only exists. There's only 10. This is the third one.
I'll take the third. Yeah. It's institutionalized. So this is a story where a hero enters or is already entrenched inside a certain group and or an institution, whatever have you, establishment, and has to make a choice to join, to escape, or destroy it. It's pretty broad, but the three ingredients to that is you need a group, either in a family, organization, business, whatever it is, a choice to either join, not join, and then ultimately you need a sacrifice. Whatever choice comes along with it, the main character has to sacrifice something for that choice. That's an institutionalized story. One that comes to mind initially is the Poppy War. Poppy War, I think, is a very, like, even though it's not my cup of tea, I think it does that, an institutionalized story, very well.
Another one, In the Shadow of Lightning, from Brian McClellan, who was on this podcast way a long time ago. Check out that episode.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, he doesn't watch.
No, but maybe he will.
Yeah,
hi.
Good chance. So, that story aspect, wanted to note as well, for just to remind people, this is from Save the Cat, so we're going over some of this book here. We'll have that in the link in the description below, along with our Patreon, where we read a book every month with you all, so come join us there. Check the link in the description below for that.
You get book club, we get money.
That's a fair exchange.
Yeah.
That's buddy love. We'll get on to buddy love soon. That's some love right there. So yes, that institutionalized where you have to make a decision. Sometimes you see those in those mafiosa mm-hmm. types as well. What is it about institutionalized that is a story that attracts people to them? What makes it so riveting?
Well, often I would say most institutionalized stories comes from the most common one you see is one where they break away from the group, that a group is holding them and then they choose to revolt and for revolution. That's typically your standard plot. I would say, like, it definitely can go the other way, but that's where you most see it, which is really appealing to rebels, you know, for mainly for young people that want to rebel against the system, man. That's basically it.
Yeah.
That's can be a favorite story. There's even some good ones. I mean, you could say, honestly, you could even put something like 1984 as institutionalized. You could do that. Clockwork Orange is institutionalized with society itself being group or, you know, his group of misfit friends and society at large and the choice, whether or not it's a real choice or not, to abandon his old way of life or conform to society.
Mm. Maybe a lot of those dystopian types.
Could be, but, yeah.
Like Divergent.
Divergent,
because that has your institution. Do you choose which of the four factions do you pick?
Harry Potter could act in some books kind of has that, where Harry is forced to choose between Hogwarts and like the institution that it is or his friends.
That's the thing too, because we could say with Harry Potter can be so many of these story beats.
Depending
so,
on the book.
Yeah, depending. And so that is, yeah, that whole story beat institutionalized. Do you think that there's a reverse to that? Like, do you ever see is there something neat about each of these are saying there's three ingredients. So for this one, it was a group, a choice, and a sacrifice. Do you think that ever with these ingredients, because Save the Cat's trying to give instruction on how to write a book here. It's trying to give instruction on this is the best way to get this to hit. So if we take that aspect of a group, a choice, and a sacrifice, sometimes with that story, what's a new and novel way to do it for you? Because maybe the group, choice, sacrifice, can you flip those in order possibly or do something to where you think this is just a blueprint, but what would you say for an institutionalized story or dystopian? What would you like to see that's different from your typical out there?
Well, the thing I wasn't really thinking about until this is not as we're talking, but it just reminded me of a common institutionalized story where the choice is to join the institution, it'd be family-led stories. So characters that are disconnected from their family or they're standoffish or they, they connect with their father, like, or mother, whatever, or long-lost twin, whatever it is, the choice is to actually join the family, not be as distant. And often that comes at the sacrifice of your freedom or your other ambitions, but you value family over fancy job in New York City.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Because another one of these points here of like trying to see the novelty again or how important is that? I want to have a discussion that after we go through these stories as well about novelty more. But with this institutionalized, I'm kind of noticing here that institutionalizes you're entrenched in a group, an institution, establishment, family, and then you're making the choice to leave. What do you do if you're entrenched in that? It's almost like a flip of some of the rites of passage stories where your coming of age stories, you're trying to get in the group, in the clique. You're going like, oh, how do I be popular in high school? How do I get in? Like, how do I get in the in group? So institutionalized is you're in the group. How do you get out? Some rites of passage can be.
That's not exactly it. Institutionalized, it's a choice on whether to either leave the group, stay with the group, or destroy the group. Kind of three different choices.
Yeah.
A lot of, I'm thinking of some of those older 90s movies or 2000s movies where, what's the one where the mother and daughter kind of switch bodies? What's that movie?
Are the mother and daughter do?
Yeah. Mother switch into the daughter's body and vice versa.
Don't know that movie.
Whatever, swap, something, whatever it is. Anyway. It's, you know, mother, daughter, they're in a family. That's the institution. But the daughter is trying to separate herself from her mother.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of friction between them. Them switching bodies allows them to grow closer to one another. And ultimately, you know, daughter makes the choice to, you know, be closer to her family and accept her mother for her faults and vice versa for the mother and her daughter. So that's starts of the institution of the family. They want to maybe separate and there's friction between them and they make the choice to stay together.
Again, with Sword of Kaigan, another example of do you stay with the family, leave the family, or destroy the family?
Yeah.
A lot of that decision making. And so maybe that because it seems like institutionalized you're in the group. I'm having that correct here, right?
Yeah,
you're in, you have to make a decision, and then like a lot of your coming of ages, you could not be in a group and trying to get in, and maybe you have to learn a life lesson there through it because institutionalized. Maybe some of the life lessons from institutionalized is you realize along the way. Yeah.
I think a lot of it is the group just has to exist. I think there's part of it is I think you don't have to necessarily be in the group to begin with. But for example, there's a plenty of fantasy sci-fi groups.
It says here a hero enters or already entrenched inside a certain group.
Yeah.
So it could be like that divergent we were talking about where making a choice to, hey, which of the four things am I entering? And that usually happens earlier on in the stories. Yeah.
It's not a good example.
What's that?
Fourth wing.
Yeah.
Fourth wing, she is not, Violet. I got the name right here.
Violence.
Sorry. She starts on the out group. She isn't a part of anything, but then she is trying to join. She's getting into this institution, this group.
Yeah.
And then she has to make the choice of does she stay? Does she stick up for the system? Does she leave or does she destroy it? Like that's literally.
Or does she have sex the whole book?
That's
another big decision to make.
That's a big decision. And we know what choice she makes.
Twice. Two times. She makes a riveting decision.
Twice. And she would have made a lot more if circumstances, you know,
if it were up to her.
If it were up to her, but too many of her friends keep dying around her and it was a real buzzkill.
Yes, that's institutionalized. And that's a good point with entering or already entrenched in the group. And I think it can be the thing that interests me the most about these. Where earlier we were saying the why done it, the why. Why did they kill them? The institutionalized, you can see a story where they stay in the institution and there's a great message behind that, or leave and destroy the institution. I sometimes see the staying in the institution, the staying in the entrenchment can almost be more powerful because innate human reaction is viva la revolution. Yeah. Innate human reaction is like, you know, leave the family, you know. Destroy the government. Destroy Richard with facts and logic. You know, I'm always thinking like, duh, 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 duh. So.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone wants to dethrone the king.
Yeah.
Until it's time to sit on the throne.
That was actually pretty nice. You referred to yourself as a king there. But that kind of spirit, the human spirit of we're always looking to take down rather than how do you look into a system and.
This system is a minor inconvenience to me. Tear it down.
Destroy it. So that's what I like about some institutionalized stories. Is there something for you that you get out of it?
What? Oh, definitely. That's why Sword of Kaigan was so moving.
Yes. Keeping soft on that. But yeah.
But there's so many reasons to leave.
Yes.
There's so many good reasons. And no one would blame you. But it's kind of heartwarming to some degree of why you stay. And that's being a hard choice, but not a wrong choice. And that's compelling. That's interesting. It's always good to have a choice that was actually difficult to make rather than just the obvious choice. Those are not normally very interesting.
Actually, no one's going to know this reference because I think you and I were the only people in the world to see this movie.
But
Woman Talking.
That is true.
The film Woman Talking was frustrating because the woman were obviously like, there was an obvious decision within 2 minutes of the film. Like, here's the concept of the film, okay? So, women in it's today's society, but Amish? Amish-esque.
I think.
Amish light, Amish-esque. Imagine
I'm trying to remember. Fundamentalist. Yeah. I can't remember. There's another group that's like the Amish, but not the Amish, but.
Group Point without B. technology, separate from society, and these women are they're getting abused by their husbands. There was this rape that happened. Is that correct? And so, when the men go out to try to get this awful guy out of prison, the women are deciding: do we leave our abusive husbands or do we stay? And just the way the conversation around it went, I was like, you all should leave now,
yeah,
immediately. So like, from the first couple minutes, I'm going like, decision made. Why are we talking?
Pretty early in the movie, they were like, yeah, we either have to kill the people who are abusing us. Like, next time they come, I'm going to put a gun in his head. Or we leave. So I don't have the strength or the will to actually kill the person. So only option is to leave. You either arm up or fucking get out.
So with that,
those are two choices.
And the parts of the ingredients with institutionalized being a group, a choice, a sacrifice. So it all has to be the group. The choice itself has to be compelling now, to you to get you make moving.
To give the movie the most amount of credence.
It is an Oscar nominated. So
nominated didn't win nothing.
Actually, it did.
Did it?
It did.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, we're gonna memory hole that
I'm pretty sure it won like script or something. I don't know. Let me double check. Let me double check. Woman talking.
That script.
What Oscar did it win? I'm double checking. It won. It might have won best adapted screenplay and did it?
There must
best been. Adapted screenplay is what it won.
All right.
Anyways, what was your point?
Point being, the idea of where these women are coming from, and it is a hard decision for them. Of it's their entire way of life, their culture, all their family members. They'd be leaving behind important men in their life that they wouldn't want to separate from their sons, their brothers, and sometimes their husbands, which are like the ones that aren't abusive and they are actually good to them. That's the ones they would be leaving behind. So it was hard for them there. I get it. But also, I don't know.
I mean, hey, in a similar way.
Maybe you could have, instead of just saying, oh, we have to leave all the men behind, why don't you, I don't know, leave the abusers and like, hey, your sons that are cool and like 12, take them with you.
and this
that's an option too.
This is coming from the perspective too of one of, is this an institutionalized story? In a way it is.
Yeah.
12 Angry Men. Where, in a way, is it a group, the jurors, have to make a choice, and one of our main characters there is making the choice to go against what the other jurors are saying. In a way, it has some functionality there.
Kind of.
Because if we're using this, a hero enters or already entrenched inside a certain group, so he's inside of jurors, and must decide to join, escape, or destroy it, and decides... In words, not kill.
Very beginning, he says he just immediately decides to leave the group. He doesn't join the consensus.
Yeah, and now he's trying to convince them all.
As they go on, he decides to destroy the consensus of the all guilty group.
So, hey,
maybe so.
There we go. Now, do we want to go into the fourth story that is told everywhere? Yeah. I mean, this is a big one. So this is superhero. This covers some things. I think this also covers hero's journey in a way, because the way Save the Cap says it is, it's an extraordinary hero finds himself in an ordinary world and must come to terms with being special or destined for greatness. So a lot of your hero's journey, I think, is encompassed in this. So it's not just superhero as in Marvel, DC, Superman, Spider-Man. This includes your Harry Potters, your Percy Jacksons, your... Think of a hero's journey. Any hero's journey out there where you have some special power, and a lot of your hero's journeys are like this. You have... some sort of, or you have your character live in their ordinary world, and then all of a sudden there's some interruption in their life and a call to action to take on this challenge. They don't at first, but eventually they're compelled to. In some way, Hagrid comes and shows off. Gandalf comes, knocks on Bilbo's door and says, nope, you're coming. So in some way, pushes you into this adventure, and by the end of the story, the three ingredients here in the superhero is you have a hero with a power. So I guess to be more specific here, like that is your Harry Potter, your Percy Jackson, where you have a genuine power and ability. Secondly, you have a nemesis. So that would be Voldemort in Harry Potter. It would be the gods in Percy Jackson. And then a curse that our hero must suffer for the price of their greatness. Harry Potter's scar, Harry Potter and Voldemort, very clearly there. And so more specifically on this, maybe would encompass all hero journeys, but it encompasses some hero's journeys.
Yeah.
So
you get some of the great ones with like Superman. You want to break all three of those ingredients up. Of course, Superman with all of his powers. Nemesis, he has several of being, you know, Lex Luthor, Doomsday, whatever have you.
His relationship.
Yeah, his relationship.
Sometimes it gets tough.
Sometimes it's tough. Yeah. But that's the thing. His curse is that he's Superman and Clark Kent. And that Clark Kent doesn't get the glory that Superman does. And so that's the curse, is his secret. And it's oftentimes burdensome that Lois Lane is, you know, loves and appreciates Superman, but doesn't when she doesn't know, doesn't appreciate Clark Kent, and doesn't know that Clark is actually Superman, and sets the curse. Same thing with Spider-Man, all these things of Spider-Man has all these amazing powers, but ultimately he's gets fired from his pizza boy delivery job and can barely pay rent. So, but again, and you comic nerds, I know eventually the comics go on to where Spider-Man's CEO of, you know, Stark Towers, basically, you know, trademarked his own Parker Industries. I get it. I understand. I get the concept.
And so for this type of story beat, what do you think the most important part is to get right?
I mean, the curse.
Yeah, agreed.
That's where it becomes a compelling superhero story. There's a lot, and I mean a lot of stories that has the two of hero with power, nemesis. Those two alone, you get most trash isekai manga and anime from Japan. That's most of them. But there's no curse. It's just hunky-dory for the main character. He just has superpowers. Like, oh, this is great. I'm going to save the day, and everyone loves me.
That would be some people's complaints for Superman. Like, hey, if they're focusing on the curse being a power, his curse comes in other forms. And
yeah. Well, that's the thing. You can have a good superhero story, yeah, but the good ones do the curse right. That's the important aspect of all of it. Without that, you have a very uncompelling superhero story.
Yeah. And a lot of that, Sanderson's magic system, flaws, limitations, the curse itself. Look, what... the why and the why done it. The what was the one we just talked about a second ago? The institutionalized, the choice you're making, is the choice actually interesting? And with the superhero, is the curse impactful enough?
And why? The curse is directly or indirectly tied to the power. So in Superman, yeah, it's not, kryptonite isn't his curse. It's a weakness, whatever it is. But the curse is his secret identity, which is directly related to him being Superman. Same thing of Peter Parker, great power comes great responsibility. That responsibility, that curse is directly linked to the power, either through circumstance or through direct relation, like Harry Potter's scar and how the pains him. It's a reminder of his the death of his parents. It's quite literally like, hey, he's really special, but it cost him his parents' life.
And ultimately has to sacrifice himself, yeah, in order to defeat Voldemort. And yes. So that is the superhero. Do you want to? Did I? That you one, did correct. That Do you one. Want to do the next one?
I'll do this one.
Go ahead.
The dude with a problem.
Dude.
An innocent, ordinary hero suddenly finds himself in the midst of an extraordinary circumstance and must rise to the challenge. The key ingredients for this one is an innocent hero, a sudden event, and a life or death battle.
Mm.
Basically, one of my favorites would definitely be The Martian. I love that one. I love The Martian, the novel, the movie's pretty good. Not as good as the book, of course, as it always is. But you have a good innocent hero, sudden change of events, and then it's man versus nature. And it has constantly due to the problem. Due to the bunch
or
of
Or man
problems.
Versus man.
You could also have man versus man due to the problem.
Yeah, this dude with the problem is essentially the superhero part, but you don't have superpowers in a way. It's just taking an ordinary person. So that it looks like Save the Cat splits the hero's journey into two different ones. The hero that has special powers and the one that's a dude with the problem that doesn't have special powers. You're Katniss Everdeen. Ordinary person in dystopian world that has to rise to the challenge, do the things. An innocent hero. Katniss is an innocent hero. Sudden event. Well, the calling. And then a life or death battle. Literally a life or death battle. In the arena, yes, that's what it's called.
A lot of that tie is the power and the curse kind of go hand in hand together. So, like, the cause of the problem is also the same thing as the solution and the cause for greatness. And so that greatness comes with a curse and a downside. Where this one, it's just the person so they can have their own.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Backstory, history, their own experience, whatever, but that's right. Not a factor of why they're in their current predicament.
I would probably, like, if you were in a book, I would have this one for your character, but it would be dude with lots of problems.
Yes.
It would be like dude that has to, like, a lot of character arc.
A lot of heavy work. This guy needs a lot of character development.
Wheel of Time with Rand, I understand why it's so long. You have to make it that many books to make them interesting, right? You have to get to the part. So for you, I'd want to do the same. I'd double the length of Wheel of Time, get like, all right, Rich, maybe around book six.
A solid 30 books.
Oh, man. We'd scratch the surface. And so that's Dude with Problem, part of your hero's journey there. Can we go on to my favorite one? One of my favorites. Okay.
Go ahead.
Fool Triumphant. Ah. I love Fool Triumphant. This is an underestimated underdog hero is pitted against some kind of establishment and proves worth to society. This is your pure underdog story. You know, we're not even going to talk not Rambo, the Rockies. No. But this is a lot of Discworld books that I love have this Fool's Triumphant with Brother from Small Gods, with Mort from Mort.
Also the main character going postal.
Amazing. I think Terry Pratchett loves this style of storytelling, and it helps when you can make the story kind of fun, whimsical, absurd. Mm-hmm. But the three ingredients for this kind of Fool Triumphant are this: a fool, which is someone who's overlooked by society, an establishment thing that fools is pitted against, and a transmutation where it becomes something new. And so you have Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Small Gods, as I said, Princess Diaries, these kind of stories where it's not the previous two where we were talking about superheroes and we were talking about Dude with a Problem, where it's the superhero has power and special ability. The dude with a problem has a serious problem, needs to rise up to the establishment. The Fool Triumphant, no one looks at them as even a dude that can solve the problem or the superhero in the first place. Society doesn't recognize them even in that respect. Society looks almost down at them, ignores them. Seeing this, you got a thought.
I do, and I can't even talk to you about it. Why? Because it's the twist.
Oh.
One day, you're going to read a book. Okay. I'm not going to say the name of the book, because then it would give spoilers.
Okay.
But it's going to happen.
All right.
I maybe have not even recommended you to this book. So
wow.
I'm not even giving...
Is it on my radar at all?
I'm not saying. Oh, okay. So it could be something I've recommended you, or something not.
Okay.
I'm giving it... But there's a really cool one where it starts as you think it's a
triumphant, dude with a problem?
Dude with a problem.
Okay.
It's a dude with a problem, initially. And through backstory and through flashbacks, you find out it's Fool's Triumphant.
Oh, that's cool.
It's neat. It's real neat.
That's novel.
It goes back and forth. Yeah. It starts like, oh, yeah, dude with a problem. And then find through backstory, Fool Triumphant. And then that person goes like, actually, no, I am just dude with a problem. Like, I'm going to seize the day. Despite the backstory, I'm still going to... Cool little subversion twist.
Rage of Dragons?
I'm not saying.
Okay, I was just trying to guess. I was just trying to guess something.
We'll get there. We'll get there one of these days. I'm going to come back and reference this when you get around to reading it eventually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Maybe I'll remember this episode. I don't know.
Please remember this, because I'm very curious. We'll have to remember that. But yes, that Fool's Triumphant character, where we see it in a lot of your Discworld books, and Diary of a Wimpy Kid, as mentioned before as well. Underdog, overlooked, but is pitted against this society and actually creates some change. Is proven to actually have worth and value and does something to society as a whole, or does something to make something of themselves in some way. And if maybe even not of themselves, just change somewhere elsewhere.
And often they're the reason why they are shunned or not looked fondly on by society or whatever institution is the exact reason that they're successful in the first place. Fourth wing again.
so many. That's why it hits a lot.
That's why it's so popular. Because you have the idea, like, mm-hmm. she's weak, she's brittle bones, all this, but she's also smart, and she's got that thing going for her. But ultimately, her pain tolerance is actually a benefit to her, and it helps her succeed.
Maybe she would be more dude with a problem just because, you know, more innocent hero finds himself in extraordinary circumstances, and society seems to, like, she's actively being pitted against. They're focusing, like, they're like, okay, Violet.
But no one expects anything of her, mainly in the beginning. Mm. That's the element of it. If everyone's looking down on her, no one thinks that she's going to succeed.
Hmm.
Except the main love interest hunk.
True, but I would say that's what makes it more due to the problems that she's acknowledged. Like, even if she's acknowledged, I think the Fool's Triumphant is more so neglected, almost like a nobody.
Fool's Triumph is more of
underdog hero.
It's an underdog. It's kind of your underdog story. Yeah, they're known, but they're looked like, yeah, that person's not going to succeed. Like, they're just looked down upon of, yeah, they're never going to amount to anything. There's no hope for them.
Well, I mean, that way too, Katniss Everdeen could be defined as that too, because no hope. She's from District 12, all this sort of stuff. I think there's a little bit, because we got to be careful with making them both the same. So I think the distinguishing, like, what would you say distinguishes then Fool's Triumphant from Dude with a Problem for you?
Well, looking at here, the three ingredients are a fool or someone who is overlooked by society and naive to their own potential.
Yeah.
An establishment, what the fool is pitted against.
Yep.
And a transmutation. So become something new. I definitely think Katniss Everdeen falls into this.
Would also fall due to the problem of an innocent hero, a sudden event, a life or death battle. Which brings us back to, are all stories just one thing? Plot happens to characters and thing results. You know, can you just kind of blend the mold with these, or what makes someone more fool or more dude?
Well, let's compare something like The Martian. I think The Martian is very much due to the problem.
Yeah.
Not a Fool's Triumphant, because everyone kind of expects... Like, he's not overlooked by society. He's not against a potential establishment, and there doesn't really need to be a transmutation of him. He is what he is, and he changes it. I think maybe that's part of it, is a transmutation.
Okay.
So Katniss have to become someone new by the end of it?
I mean, if with character arcs, I would say most books you become someone new if there's a character arc.
Yeah, so, but there's a lot of due to the problems.
Yeah.
Where I'm thinking of a lot of thriller stories. The guy doesn't have to change. It's just the adventure, and the person maybe learns a lesson, but doesn't become someone new, and someone, like, the position in the hierarchy has changed. I think that's kind of an important factor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Katniss falls more under Fool Triumphant than due to the problem.
I think the book itself says falls with due to the problem more. I think that's what we have from notes here, but can double check that. But that, again, it's towing that line between what kind of plot archetype can you fit this person. I think it's more feel with the Katniss Everdeen, the way it's explained here with Fool Triumphant, is the underestimated underdog hero pitted against some sort of establishment and proves hidden worth to society. It's almost like the Katniss part, it's not like proving hidden worth in a respect. It's her fighting for survival, more dystopian-esque, where the prove hidden worth in society seems to be more of your overlooked turns into affecting society in a way that society didn't expect, like didn't give credit to the person. I guess the way I think of Fool Triumphant is more positive in nature. Like, it's not a... your dude with a problem has that bad society rise up in society type of thing, where your Fool's Triumphant has more of a fun feel to it. When I think of the fool, is funny. The fool, I think it's called the Fool's Triumphant because there's someone who's, you know, they're just the fool. Who cares about them? Why? You almost ask yourself, why are you following this protagonist? Because when I read Mort or Brother, I'm almost going like, you know, why this character? You could have picked anyone. Whereas when you pick Katniss or Violet or Violence, when you pick one of them, it's like, oh, I'm obviously following them because they're so ingrained in society. They have work to be done. They're going to prove people wrong. It's like, they're clearly the protagonist because everything revolves around them. The Fool's Triumphant, nothing revolves around them. They're almost a side character who becomes important.
The key for you is that overlooked.
It's the overlooked, and I think the fool is the one that is...
becoming someone new, the transmutation of becoming someone new, because definitely Mort and Brother from Discworld definitely become someone new.
Yes, and I love them
completely.
I love them.
That's definitely definition of Fool Triumph.
Oh yeah, they are.
Katniss, I guess, doesn't really become someone new. She wins. She becomes maybe more confident.
Character arc, solves some flaws. Yeah.
But ultimately, it's not become someone new.
Yeah, really a definition for me. Yeah, that transmutation and looking at if you're following a protagonist that seems like the plot's happening around them almost, like where Lies of Locke Lamora, maybe I would consider that more into the Fool's Triumphant, but I think it follows more of the heavy kind of dude with problems things. But it's one of those things where if the character is almost seems like a side character, but we're following them and they're the protagonist. That's the Fool.
Could Dungeon Crawler Carl, which one would he fall under? Because I think at a certain point, especially in the beginning of the book, plot's happening to him. He's kind of the Fool, overlooked, like the guy with boxers on. Boxers and a leather jacket on in this dungeon. And like, what is he going to do? He's such a small fry. He doesn't stay the Fool for very long, but also he has to become someone different.
I would say dude with a problem.
Do with the problem still? Yeah. Okay.
I think for it, because going over innocent hero, sudden event, literally the whole dungeon collapses and life or death battle, that's all Dungeon Crawler.
That's all it is.
That's definition right there. And the thing with Carl and his point of view, I'm never wondering why he's our protagonist. Mm. Because, of course, we're following Carl. He's the best crawler. it's something with that. I think that the Fool's Triumphant takes it in a way where it's really unexpected main character by the end gives main character energy by the end. Mm. That's kind of how I think about it.
That's a good way to put it.
But okay, we've got our next one. I've been waiting to get to this one.
All right.
Oh yeah. I think I talked about Fool's Triumphant though, so go ahead. Platform's yours.
Buddy love. This is a big catch-all for a lot of different types of love stories. So this most of the hero romance novels, a hero is transformed by meeting someone else, including in this love stories, friendship stories, pet stories, even examples, Twilight, La La Land, Marley and Me, those type of things. The ingredients to it is an incomplete hero either needs another to be whole. You then have a counterpart that fills that hole, and then a complication. Some type of situation that keeps the buddies apart, but then ultimately puts them back together. That's a lot of stories
A lot of love stories.
That's a lot of love stories that fit all in one package.
Yeah. Incomplete hero, counterpart, and complication. That's every episode of Two to Ramble. I mean, think about it.
I'm waiting for the episode where, you know, that complication brings us close together. In over 2 years, hasn't happened yet.
It says that keeps buddies apart, but also pulls them together. Yeah, you're right. It needs to pull together.
It does have to pull together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is where I wanted to bring back to the Beauty and the Beast conversation briefly and say, like, why we're having this conversation of the retelling, the repackaging of stories, how this is as old as time itself, even before the written word, the oral word was discussing and passing these stories down to the next generation, where Beauty and the Beast... Not the Disney 1990s version, but even before that, the 1700s written.
Not the really subpar sung version with Emma Watson. Yeah, not that one.
Oh, I kind of like that.
You liked the singing in that one.
I just remember like seeing it when I was younger and going, ah, neat. I don't remember hating it.
I don't like musical movies that don't use actual singers for don't make actors sing. I don't want any of that. There's a few exceptions. Some are actually good singers and are on Broadway.
I'll have to listen.
Unless they've sung on Broadway, they're not allowed to sing in a movie. That's the Richard rule.
Hmm.
Exception also to that rule is Hugh Jackman in Les Miserables. He should have been dubbed. Though, to be fair, Russell Crowe really needed to be dubbed. Hugh Jackman was better than him.
I'm so
point being,
underdeveloped
whatever.
On my musicals.
Yeah. It's fine. It's not fine. We got to watch Oh Brother Where Art Thou. They dubbed all the voices.
Was it great?
It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's a musical, but they actually have real singers.
Thing is, the people watching, I'm going to make a blanket statement. They don't like musicals because we did an episode of musicals and had a great time. It was a great episode.
That was a great time.
And the video tanked. Nobody, oh, yeah. Nobody
also,
watched.
How novel of an idea was that?
It was great.
It was a,
you came with,
it was a
fresh, you came with a great idea.
Idea.
It was fun. We had energy, just no one watched it. I had a good time.
Yeah. I'm
what
still
episode
working.
Was that? It was something about, what would we title it? It was like musicals.
More fantasy should be musicals.
Yeah, I think that was the title, something like that. It was fun.
Going over the...
Go check out that video back then.
Go ahead.
That was a good one. Yeah,
basically the reasons, like what are the positive things that a musical can actually do, and the idea is that there are so many fantasy stories where the prose of a musical would elevate a fantasy story.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get into the details. It's fun.
It was great. But Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
Musical or not, we're just talking about that story itself. Okay, so to go down the line where Beauty and the Beast started, it said that the story Cupid and Psyche, which is an ancient chronicle from the Latin novel Metamorphosis, this is from BC coming into, it was written around zero. So that long ago, where this story Cupid and Psyche and Beauty and the Beast have a lot of similarities. The writer of Beauty and the Beast might have gotten some inspiration from it, where the both stories deal with their respective beasts as a punishment for the beauty in these stories. It was not a punishment for her own transgression, but rather for that of her father for stealing a rose. Sorry, this is a Beauty and the Beast. And Psyche, on the other hand, has to be punished because she is too beautiful or jealous of Venus's taste. Now, this takes some more Greek myths in the Psyche version, but both stories kind of have your beauty, your beast, and a lot of the similar story types that leads to what Beauty and the Beast is. And then we can go to today and see a book like ACOTAR, which is essentially a retelling of Beauty and the Beast, with instead of the beauty, which in the 1700s France, this was written with like ball gowns and elaborate, like nice, look, we're in France, we're in culture, like think about all that class. Again, Orient Express, the old days.
Back when the French had class.
Back before the revolution, you know?
Yeah.
So they had this, you know, Beauty and the Beast, you think of it and you can picture it in your head. ACOTAR takes the beauty part, instead of having that, has a character where more modern audiences, where it's like your main female protagonist who is has a bunch of flaws and issues, just downbeat in life.
Can't read.
Sisters don't appreciate her. Mom's passed away. Dad is not paralyzed. Lost a leg. Disabled. And so
disabled, but also just gone emotionally, mentally, and just. Nothing.
Essentially, for our main character, the beauty in this is just rags to riches in a way. Just the very much in the rags, where your beauty in the other stories can be a different protagonist. Just to show for modern audiences, taking that character.
Very much a Cinderella type deal, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A beginning of Cinderella.
Yeah. And then you have your... Oh, yeah, that's a good point. And then you have your beast in the Beauty and the Beast versus the beast with... ACOTAR is a fairy with a mask and kind of modern magic, like fays and the myth behind fays, and just more fantasy-esque for modern audiences. And of course, they're smut for modern audiences. So you have ACOTAR today, Beauty and the Beast then, and then Cupid and Psyche way long ago, to talk about this whole buddy love thing of where it seems like different generations and times can retell a similar story in a way that hits for, back in the day, a bunch of plebeian Greeks who were just roaming around the street who could like Cupid and Psyche because they believed in those gods. And they could connect to it because the story felt real.
Even if they didn't believe in those gods, they at least connected to culture.
The themes, and it exactly. meant something to them. And then in the 1700s with Beauty and the Beast there, and then the telling by Disney later and just kind of connecting with an audience in some sort of way.
And then women now that just... want more porn in their books.
You know, as soon as you said woman, I knew it was going some direction. Like, yeah. you had it in your eyes. It's like, I saw it.
I'm just saying, one of these days, we're going to read a romance story that's actually wholesome and be like, oh, look at that.
Oh, wow.
But for now, we haven't. It's never wholesome.
We've had Fourth Wing and ACOTAR. I don't know if that's a good sample size.
No.
It's made us think a lot.
It's a sample size of what's popular.
Yeah.
Because you go down the list of popular romances, What's the most popular romance ever written?
It's Avatar, right?
No.
Oh.
50 Shades of Grey.
Oh.
It's one of the highest selling novels of all time.
And that is a retelling of Twilight in a way.
Yeah.
Wasn't it a fanfic of Twilight?
There's a reason things are popular for what they are. I'm not prescribing. I'm just analyzing of, that seems to be real popular.
You're just the observer.
What am I seeing that they all have in common?
You're just observer. You're just noting things.
Yeah, don't shoot the person who noticed.
The messenger.
I'm getting in trouble for noticing. I'm a victim of pattern recognition.
I'm too smart. I'm pained with intelligence.
I see triangle and I see triangle. I go, look at that. It's two triangles.
Genius.
Society is telling me to say that one's a triangle and the other's a trapezoid, but I know they're both triangles. Can't fool me.
So that's buddy love. Yeah. Just going into that story of how love stories are timeless, can go back to, and another way of saying, oh, here's another interesting tidbit that
what do you got?
Was looking into this. This isn't buddy love, but this is just more to do with oral tradition and mythos in general. Mythos, or real, I should say, however it's perceived, where the Epic of Gilgamesh, one of the first fantasy stories ever told, I classify it as fantasy.
It definitely is, but
it's also mythos as well. So you could put a lot of definitions on it. But the Epic of Gilgamesh has this flood in it, this giant flood that exists there. And you can look at ancient books like the Bible, Noah's Ark, and the flood, and it goes back to the Old Testament. There's other cultures in Asia with this flood, and you can look at similar story archetypes where you can ask yourself a couple questions there when it gets interesting in the repackaging of stories. Like, hey, one for. Epic Gilgamesh, Sumerians in that time, another one for Hebrews, and other ones. You can look for different cultures at the story of the flood, and you can look at that in a couple ways. Of one, there was a flood, and a lot of these different cultures wrote about this great event that happened in the ancient world, and that could be one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is this flood story, and different cultures were inspired by the story of the flood and wrote it.
All across the world, there's
been floods,
some type of flood,
exactly
somewhere.
Yeah. So I just found it interesting that even something like that, where that some event could create repackaging of stories in a different way, unless in Asia and Egypt and everywhere there was like a literal world flood, which people can believe too. So it's just how that story even could be repackaged in ancient times. It's pretty cool. So nothing to do with buddy love, but I just found it cool.
Fair enough. Hey, we're allowed to go on
rambling.
Yes.
We're
allowed.
Teeters my totter.
Yes.
I realize, you know what? I recently haven't said my catchphrase enough because you know why I haven't? Vera, who's our patron, one of our patrons out there, one day she told me, like, hey, I told my boyfriend about teeter my totter. He thought it was cringe. And since that day, I've just been really self-hating about my catchphrase.
Well, you shouldn't do that.
I'm coming back.
It's on a t-shirt.
I know.
We printed teeter my totter
on
a t-shirt.
And democracy is cringe. But I will say, the teeter my totter thing, my most prized possession. Have that art that the artist did for us, like, actually kick ass. And the democracy is cringe one.
Yes.
But you know, I'm going to start using teeter my totter more. I haven't said it in many a times.
I still to this day don't really know what it means.
We went over this.
I know.
We went over this.
But in one ear, out the other. It didn't land.
It didn't teeter your totter. I totally get it.
Sure. say what you will about mine. At least mine makes sense. I'm not a fan of democracy is cringe. When I hear someone say, oh, look, isn't democracy great? Look, we get to vote on things. And I'm like, that's cringe. No.
We went over this. You know, triangle and triangle. You just the word just has a double meaning. That's all it is. It's the you teeter my totter can mean
one's a triangle, one's a diamond.
Oh, yeah.
An upside down triangle.
Nice.
So diamond as in not the shape, but what looks like a literal diamond.
A 2D.
A diamond. 2D version of a yes.
I get you.
The jewel.
Can we move on?
Sure.
Okay. So this next one is out of the bottle. I don't see too many stories with this one, but the Out of the Bottle, this is the eighth one, by the way. Mm-hmm. We've definitely rambled plenty here. So this Out of the Bottle is an ordinary hero is temporarily touched by magic, usually involving a wish fulfilled or a curse bestowed, and the hero learns an important lesson about appreciating and making the most of reality. Now, this one you could see in stuff like Groundhog's Day, Bruce Almighty, a lot of comedies have your Out of the Bottle types.
Aladdin.
Literal bottle.
I mean, literal wish fulfillment out of the bottle.
The money there. Yep. So the three ingredients here are a hero deserving of magic, a spell, and then a lesson.
And that deserving is not necessarily, they deserve something good because they are virtuous. It could also be they deserve it because they've been terrible. So in Liar Liar with
Jim Carrey,
yeah, not being a good father, being unattentive, being a slimy lawyer that doesn't tell the truth. He deserves the curse of always telling the truth.
Yes, and the spell and a lesson that is learned by the end, which nice.
What is there such a thing? You haven't read it, but I would say some characters in Discworld are in that function.
I'd imagine. It really works more with comedies.
Well, often it's the wizard's stories. You haven't read too many of the wizard stories from Discworld. No. That happens frequently.
Oh, nice.
Magic temporary. It's like, and the character, normal character's like, and now this magic thing. It's like, what are you going to do? And then, lesson and ta-da.
Very nice.
What other things have we read that would fall into that category?
I was thinking about it for this episode, couldn't think of one. Because really? I think Out of the Bottle is just a lot of good comedy movies can do it, but I can't think of many books. It's an ordinary hero. So there's a hero deserving magic, a spell, and a lesson touched by magic. I can't think of one, at least not in our fantasy realm.
Well, stretch that term spell. Uh-oh. Could be maybe something else. Temporary. Instead of spell, could it also be responsibility? So someone is put on the, someone is made king for the, what's that movie with Eddie Murphy? There's Swap Places.
Oh, Swap. What is you with the swapping today? What's Swap Places? Is it not Coming to America?
Those two rich Wall Street guys basically take this rich Wall Street trader and this homeless man. Okay. And they go and they have a bet, basically. Like, if we switch their positions, one says if we switch them, they'll both, one guy, the homeless man will succeed as just as well as the guy who's this rich trader. And the other guy says, no, I think the rich trader will actually be able to climb back up to his position. And I think the homeless man will become homeless again as well. You know, the idea of, are you a victim of circumstance or are you able to make whatever your life. Anyway, this cruel bet that they're doing, that whole thing is so Eddie Murphy is homeless, poor, all this, and suddenly has all this money. He's now a trader. He's has this nice apartment, everything. His life is going great. So maybe that's not touched by magic. It's not a spell, but then he learns a lesson from it and ultimately comes around to, learns a lesson.
That might
kind of works.
I think it'll fit in the other ones because this one's specifically touched by some kind of magic. And it does use it in quotes. So it says usually involving a wish fulfilled or a curse bestowed. So almost something like why Liar Liar was a great thing is it's not necessarily like rub a bottle and it happens. Curse. He literally wishes. Mm-hmm. He makes a wish. And
the sun.
Yes, the sun makes the wish and this curse is literally bestowed upon. So it's like, I think it's more direct with that, but with that Eddie Murphy movie though, that sounds more fool dude, but I don't know what it would fit in.
I haven't seen the film, so I think it's out of the bottle.
Okay. Have you seen the film? So I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Go to the next one.
Yeah.
All right, I'll start this one. The ninth one is the Golden Fleece. So this is hero or group goes on a trip of some type in search of a thing and winds up discovering something else about themselves. Lord of the Rings. Basically, your quest, your heist, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, Wizard of Oz, Lies of Lachlamora,
Wheel of Time. Wheel of Time fits all these, pretty much.
Oh, no, Wheel of Time has something of all of these. Yeah. I was going through this list and going like, yeah, there's a character. At least they have one main character going through each of these stories. Like it has them all.
Damn. Nice.
Anyway.
Is Matt's the fool?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not the fool forever, but for a significant time he is.
Yeah.
Then you have three ingredients of the Golden Fleece. Is you have a road, the trip itself. Then you have a team, a fellowship, and then a prize, the goal.
Yeah, that fits so many of your quest stuff.
That's a lot of fantasy.
It covers a lot.
What a sci-fi would that cover?
Fellowship. A Fire Upon the Deep is a perfect example of the Golden Fleece, where it's the literal trip. Not spoiling the story, but the premise of this, for those who haven't seen it or read it, is this AI. This AI is, that's an improper explanation of what this is. It's this technology. It's this transcendent technology.
Yeah.
It is beyond our understanding. Is
celestial technology.
Celestial technology is so above our understanding, and it's starting to destroy worlds. And so we have a group of characters who gets together, and their entire goal. So it would be a road trip. The trip itself, they're in a spaceship, go into this world with a team, and the goal is to make sure that this technology is stopped. This celestial, ascending, transcended being is stopped.
Mm.
And the way that the book starts, do we have Fire Upon the Deep behind us here? Is it? Oh, please tell me, because it is.
I got it somewhere.
It's got to be. Come on.
Up there.
Oh, let me go get it. 1 second, Rich. Where is it?
Vernon Vringe, blue one on the right. Oh. Nope. Oh. Grab the wrong one.
There we go.
And okay. Drop my
That's fine. Okay. So here we go. This is a Fire Upon the Deep's intro, which I still think of to this day. Just this opening three sentences. Mm-hmm. How to explain, how to describe, even the omniscient viewpoint quells.
Woo!
Oh, baby! That is an intro. And then the thing it's describing in that prologue is precisely that technology. Mm. And you get introduced to it right away. We don't talk about that book enough.
That's a great book.
It's phenomenal. And it's one of those things that I read fresh, and when finishing it, was enjoyed it. But the more it sat with me, the more I'm like, damn, it's impressive.
It stays with you.
It doesn't leave you. The world,
I'm thinking of
thought-provokingness.
Specifically the alien creatures.
Yeah.
Just so unique and cool.
The Tynes are,
The Tynes are some of the best aliens I've ever,
five-star world.
Not only were they unique and novel and cool, but they were all, you connected with the characters in a unique way.
Yeah.
That's a strange thing, is I had an emotional connection to these very, very alien creatures that are definitely not human, and they operate on a completely different emotional spectrum, that they are not even individuals.
Yeah.
But I connected with them as a character.
So several strange.
So strange, so amazing, great.
Highly recommend that, yes. Yeah. Now we have one more, Rich.
Yep.
One more of these stories, and it's called Monster in the House. This is the last one. After this, there's no more stories that exist.
Yep, okay? This is all of them.
This is where a hero or group must overcome some kind of monster in some enclosed setting, and someone is usually responsible for bringing the monster into being. A lot of your horror stories are covered in this, where that your ingredients are a monster, a house, and a sin. And that sin is where someone is guilty of bringing the monster in the house. A lot of your Stephen King horror novels. We are not well-read on horror.
No, so, I've never been a big horror person, but we have read Annihilation.
Yes.
That would count as a monster in the house type deal.
Fairly close. I mean, closest you can get, I think. There might not be that someone guilty doesn't focus on that, but yeah.
It is. It's a factor of why is the monster attacking them specifically is kind of directly relational to...
I was thinking of the Area X itself. Yes, the actual monster in Area X. Got it. Yep. Yeah, that would count. Nice. We got one.
We're not much horror people. I read Between Two Fires. that would count as a monster in the house type okay. story, but it also would count as a golden fleece. So it's kind of those two together, but it does have monsters that are directly related to the sin of some of the characters. But good book. Also recommend.
Right.
Anything else about that?
Not about Monster in the House.
Okay.
But about the larger thing, yes.
Okay. What's your final closing statements on only 10 stories actually existing and everything else we do is just a rehash and that we're wasting our time? After we finished 10 exemplar examples of these 10 different stories, we should be done. We don't have to read anymore. We've read the 10. And move on to other things.
In a way, if you watch 10 To the Ramble episodes, what else is there to learn? What else is there to look other than us rehashing certain things from before?
That's generous.
In a way, this video, we talked about Save the Cat like 50 episodes ago. 70 episodes ago.
Yeah.
We had a different thing with it. We were focused on a little bit different aspect in that video. But in a way, like, oh, is us talking about the 10 stories here also part of our conversation about copyright and also about AI and how we talk about originality and novelty? And are we just rehashing the same conversation of like...
Yeah. I think they could watch 3 episodes and basically have the download on
I would say watch 3 shorts and you should judge us completely off of those.
Yeah. I think our shorts are entirely a great example and encompasses our content perfectly well in entire context too.
Hilarious, actually. I think it was Levy from our Patreon. I don't know if it was a short where he found us, but he was saying that what it was either that short or the Red Rising review that we did. He was so angry at how much I loved the book. He joined the Patreon just to shit talk me. He joined specifically because he says, yeah, I was in a bad place. he was so angry, like, who is this freaking nerd that likes Red Rising that much? And he joined to hate on us. And you know what? Over time, we had a buddy love story. Or over time, we figured out, hey, we have more in common than against, bro. Dude, you might have a problem, but in the end, you're not the monster in the house. I'm going to golden fleece you, be right here and dap you up, bro. Just connect all the 10 stories. We're all one kumbaya. You know what I'm saying?
You know, that voice right there, it kind of reminds me of a comment I saw recently that we need another channel called Two to Lift. We just need a gym channel.
Dun 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 dun.
Each intro is just us singing a different Lord of the Rings song, but more the one that is closely tied to the story itself.
That'll be nice.
Is there a gym Lord of the Rings song?
A gym Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
I mean, all of them could be turned into a gym.
That is true.
Yeah, all of them are just right, like dun 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 dun. Dun. Then you take all the orcish songs, like
that would be better.
Like, take all those kind of. I think the ones that wouldn't work is like hot, the more string instruments, and when you're talking about the your Shire, or the Shire type stuff, where it's like. I mean, that's one of my favorites, but not for that setting.
Maybe when you're looking at yourself in the mirror.
If you want to see a two to lift. Okay.
Yeah.
That was a very not cliche and original episode about stories. I think we did something.
We did things. Bye-bye, everyone.
Signing off. Bye-bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.